Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
What is your view of our economy? Is there reason for optimism or gloom? Well, the likelihood of a rosy economic future, we're going to talk about it. We're also going to talk about the things that may slow that growth. My guest is Bob Long. He's the chairman of Ariba Asset Management. And Bob, you have a decidedly, rosy view of our future. You believe that we actually are going to have a good economic recovery and that things are looking up and we should be investing and taking advantage of all that. Am I kind of right about that?
That is correct. The numbers have indicated that for some time, although the liquidity crisis was so serious that it takes 5 or 10 years to really get the balance sheets back. In other words, people to save, pay off their debt, and reach a position where they can use their credit cards and start to expand and make their purchases. So all that's been moving very slowly, but it's going to get real legs very soon.
Now, what are the things? Now, I know you put out position papers on the things that you see that are the good signs in the economy, and there are some troubling signs that we don't know what kind of impact they're going to have, but there are certainly things to keep your eyes on. So let's first look at some of the positive economics. Is one of those the fact that we are seeing an uptick in housing and new homes being built? The housing market is improving. Is that one of the major factors?
Just common sense tells you that the two main engines that drive the American consumer are, number one, housing, and number two, automobiles, because those are the big-ticket items.
True.
So when those two industries are doing well, and they are, then there's going to be jobs and there's going to be real consumption, and you get the virtuous cycle going of more consumption, more demand, more investment.
That's what you want.
Investment makes more jobs and
more
capital to invest and payrolls to buy cars and houses. So that's moving in the right direction. And think about it. It's taken us 6 years to get here.
Wow. Yes, it has been a long, slow road. And I gather some people are saying that what we've just been through is the worst times that we've seen since the Great Depression. So that's pretty significant.
Well, Rogoff and Reinhardt, who published a book right after the crash of 2008, called This Time is Different, meant to say this time isn't different. And it's going to be 10 years before we get out from under this huge debt burden of housing. And, of course, it affected all areas. Corporations had too much debt. Households had too much debt. So that's worked down now to the point where corporations and households are very, very solid and able to spend. And the government has stepped in and taken the debt to keep the economy going.
Okay, but if the government were to pull back, what's going to happen now? In terms of the housing market, there's still people who are underwater on their mortgages. So that's going to have an impact on the money that's available for investment. I don't know what size, what part of the market that is. Do you have a sense for it now? I know at one time it was really pretty drastic that so many people were unable to keep their homes and to make their mortgage payments. There have been government programs that have come along, but where are we? Where do you see us now in terms of getting out of that shadow?
Well, the statistics lag, but if you look at the markets themselves, the really big problems were in Southern California, Las Vegas, South Florida. One by one, those markets have turned around and prices are moving up. The Federal Reserve's policy of keeping interest rates very low for a very long time, and boosting wealth has had a real wealth effect in the housing sector. So the other interesting point is all the middle of the country was not affected. There was no housing boom in Kansas City.
Well, people weren't buying homes they couldn't afford.
Right.
So, and the market had not increased that much, the prices.
This is a fairly limited coastal area, and in each case, the values now in general are higher than the mortgage that they hold.
Well, that's certainly a good news for a lot of people.
Small businesses
particularly who are involved in the housing industry. I mean, they've been struggling for years to try to get out from under this crisis.
There's another interesting point here, and that is if you were going to borrow money, were you going to buy something, would you borrow $1,000 if you only had $100 to take on that debt? We don't think much about leverage in real terms, but if you're paying 10% down, you're leveraged tenfold. And people were buying houses with 3% down.
Yes.
So they were leveraged 33 times the initial investment.
Well, that
it's
was
just a license to fail.
Well, the government was encouraging this and sometimes penalizing banks if they didn't lend money to borrowers who really couldn't afford it.
Very, very
so
true.
So we've got to look at a lot of factors that went into that.
So
that
the
whole
good
crisis.
News is that's not about to happen
we're
again.
We're gone. We hope not. We definitely hope not. Let me just segue to something a little bit different that just came to me. You had mentioned California, that part of the housing industry there was really underwater. California is deeply in debt. We've seen Detroit declare bankruptcy. Who knows who's going to follow next? And it seems like we haven't learned any lessons that we can't spend more than what we have. And yet we keep doing it. The federal government does it. State, local governments keep doing it. Do you have a great deal of concern about what's going to happen to our big cities and the fact that their debt loads are so huge?
I do, because Detroit is symptomatic of lots of other cities, including Chicago, just to name a big one. And in my latest communication with our own client base, I pointed out a new book by Meredith Whitney, who's well known for calling the bank failures back when Citibank went under and Bank of America failed and were rescued, of course, by the government. She's written a new book called The Fate of the State. And she goes state by state by state to tell you which ones are in debt, which ones are doing well, what the economics are. And in the middle of the country, what we call the flyover states, they're pretty well situated except for the big, I'd say, industrial centers like Chicago and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Problems are in the coastal areas, but they do have taxing power.
Mm-hmm.
Her point of view, which I think is accurate, is that they will increase taxes, as Brown has done in California,
mm-hmm.
but it will drastically slow growth.
Right.
So it'll be very, very slow growth, and they'll muddle through, so to speak.
So we want them to muddle through.
Oh, definitely.
Let's get through there by all means.
Definitely. And the way that happens is the debt they incur is usually bond debt. And they will say, well, we're going to create a new bond that matures 20 years later than the one you have.
Mm-hmm.
You give us the one that matures tomorrow, and we'll give you the one that matures in 20
so
years.
Just
and
wait.
They push the debt out.
Right.
That's the classic answer to biding time, you know,
mm-hmm.
getting time to cure the problem.
Thinking you're going to find a solution in the interim.
And we will.
We will.
We will find a solution.
You're always rosy looking. You know, I love that, even though you recognize that there are things that are stumbling blocks in our path to economic recovery. I like the fact that your message says we're going to do it because you have such great faith in our country, which is a marvelous way, an outlook for you to have. Now, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Bob Long. He's the chairman of Ariba Asset Management. And we're talking about the economic recovery and why we should be very hopeful about our future and some of the signs that things may not be totally rosy and things to look out for. Okay, so going back to the stumbling blocks, and we're going to go to the rosy bit in just a minute, but across the world, there have been such economic problems. Now, I gather there's a slow recovery in parts of Europe. But China is seeing a slowdown in growth, which I guess their slowdown would be considered fast forward for a lot of countries. But nevertheless, that's such a huge country. Is that of concern? And what should we look for in coming out of China?
Well, it's very much of concern because that economic model of low wages, manufacture, and export is not going to work in the future. They have to build consumers in their own country to work their way out of that. And the savings rate in China is borderline 50% because there's no safety net.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big transition to get consumers there to buy. And we don't know how that transition is going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
Chinese banks are in various stages of bankruptcy, like ours were. They have not been cleaned up, recapitalized, as we did in the United States. So there are lots of problems that nobody knows Compounding that, it's very difficult to believe the numbers coming out of China, frankly.
Really? So you just can't quite believe what you're hearing as well. So it may be worse than what we think.
There are people who follow the use of power, how much electricity is used, because that tells you how much manufacturing. And those facts don't support the output that the Chinese government claims. Tells us or claims is happening.
Now, when you're advising people on how to invest or what to consider, are you telling them, now you can tell I don't know a thing about this subject. So here I'm going to try to sound intelligent. Do you tell them how do you tell them to set up a portfolio in terms of investing in what might be something in another country, what might be our own country, our own industries? How do you value that for your clients?
Well, it depends on the investment objective of every client, and that's all different.
Of course, the bottom line.
There's a lot of money to be made in foreign investments in emerging nations, but for our client base, who are primarily conservative and want to keep their money first.
Yes.
And make money, expand their wealth second. We are very, very much concentrated on the U.S. Mm-hmm. because all the emerging nations are in various stages of difficulty, recessions of their own, bank problems, loan problems, and all of them except China are going through elections this year.
Oh, yes, there's some big elections
great
coming up.
Great uncertainty, and even though China's government has changed, there's still great uncertainty about how this is going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can buy Coca-Cola, for example, 80% plus of their revenue comes from around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yum Brands is the fastest growing, they own Kentucky Fried Chicken, mm-hmm. fastest growing restaurant chain in China. You can make wonderful investments in blue chip American corporations, multinationals, and have all the foreign exposure you want.
Right.
And the safety of not only the companies and the system of laws we operate under, but the dollar.
Oh, yes. And you feel the dollar is getting much stronger.
The dollar is going to be strong with the energy situation that is likely to make us self-sufficient in energy in the next 5 years.
We're getting close. What are we, 70-75% producing our own?
Close to two-thirds. Two-thirds. Very soon. And mm-hmm. Just this morning I heard the government department saying we would literally produce more oil than Saudi Arabia in 2015. Now, that's about 2 years earlier than previous forecast I had
seen.
That's
amazing.
But the U.S. dollar does not expose the investor to foreign currencies, which can really,
go
down drastically.
The fluctuations
against the dollar
can be really scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So really, as you said, the goal is to decide what you want out of your investment and then to look at all the factors that are going on right now. And I think you put together some very good talking points. One of the things that you talk about is the fact that you said that housing was healthy. What were some of the other positives that you're putting out in recent statements that you see as significant, good, the rosy news?
Well, we tend to look at the world and say, well, what are the themes? You know, what is going to drive the consumer and the corporations in the next few years? And there are four or five big themes that I think will be extremely important. And I think the number one theme is what's happening in the oil and gas fields.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just oil, which is an international commodity and will be determined by supply and demand worldwide. But we have $4 gas, $4.35 per MCF, 1,000 cubic feet, the last time I looked at it. The cost of natural gas in Europe is $12 or more. In Asia, 15 or 20 per 1,000 cubic feet.
So you're telling me we should not complain.
We should not complain. And by the way, Dow and DuPont aren't. They're building plants in the U.S. because most plastics products that they make are using natural gas as a prime
Well, now, what do you think about the what I call the war on coal, for want of a better word? Others have said it. That's not original with me. Because we are trying to so severely limit the use of coal, what kind of impact is that going to have? Because I've read somewhere that countries that have eliminated the use of coal have suffered much higher utility costs in those countries.
Oh, no doubt. And that's really the administration's intent, is to drive up the cost and so people will substitute. But at the present price of natural gas, pretty even. All the new generating plants are being built for natural gas due to government policy. Mm-hmm. And there's no competitive disadvantage. And coal is dirty. We don't really have the technology to clean it up. Mm-hmm. But we have, most experts agree, over 100 years supply of natural gas.
Well, so you have to realize my hometown was in the coal mining district of the Appalachian Mountains. I look at it and I think, oh my goodness, it's been through such tough times. And what's going to happen if the coal industry is really shut down? The town's going to die. I mean, I don't know how it's going to survive otherwise. But there's not that much that goes on there right now. So it's tough. But anyway, that's just a personal thought.
There is another outlet. We're major coal exporters.
That's right.
And by the way, 50% of the coal, 50% of the electricity is still produced by coal and will be for a long time.
Oh, is that right?
So I think we get these EPA rules back to a reality not affecting jobs, not making really big, sledgehammer changes
and
laws that hurt people.
Okay, let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Bob Long. He's the chairman of Ariba Asset Management. And we're talking about, the things that concern you, our economic outlook. Now, so there are positives. Our production of natural gas and oil is great. Our currency, you feel, is going to increase. One of the things that you talk about that makes me so happy is the insourcing of manufacturing jobs, whether that's the plant itself or bringing in the support services back to this country. And you see that as being something that's happening rather rapidly, I gather.
And it's really just beginning.
Really just beginning, okay.
Because it does take time to build plants
of course.
And move jobs. And this is really an aside, but there's a Georgia plant that was featured on 60 Minutes about 6 months ago that manufacture most of the chopsticks used in China. So
that's payback.
Don't tell me you can't export to China.
That's funny. That is, I did not know that.
That was a 60-minute revelation. But anyway, what's really behind it is low-cost energy, a workforce that's educated compared to other workforces. Mm-hmm. They're flexible. They will move to where the jobs are. If you want to talk about the jobs in North Dakota, you can make $100,000 to $150,000 just to go there.
Oh, wow.
Drive a truck or be a roughneck on a rig. So we have a flexible workforce that is capable of training, and that's converging with all the computer power and the robotics. And more recently, you may not be familiar with 3D printing, but using the printing technology of Xerox to make things, to actually manufacture things.
Really?
General Electric.
I do not know about this.
General Electric.
I've seen something somewhere, but I didn't really read it.
Well, it's been used for design because this process can make the model and then they can put it on the factory floor, but new equipment, the next generation, being led or directed by CAD/CAM computer technology, can build a shoe. Nike made a shoe. General Electric wants to use their jet engine nozzles through this technique because they're so hard to manufacture in the old-fashioned way. So in the next decade, there's going to be a tremendous number of new products made with new manufacturing technology that's automated. And granted, it won't provide as many jobs, but there'll be high-paying jobs. There'll be people in...
But it'll provide products to sell, jobs to sell them.
To give you an example, Apple is building a plant in Austin, Texas.
Good.
That will replace something like 20,000 Chinese.
Wow.
And they will employ 1,000 Americans.
It is so encouraging to see this insourcing happening.
But energy is, no country in the world is in as good a shape as we are. And we have the infrastructure both to get the energy where it needs to be and to get the product out. And the closer you are to a market, the cheaper it is. Now think about, in fact, Chinese labor costs are now higher than Mexico.
Is that right? Well, Mexico is being forecast as seeing a resurgence.
They are because they're right next door. And again, the infrastructure is there.
Mm-hmm.
That plus the automation is coming along where you just simply do things with fewer people.
Mm-hmm.
It involves a lot of training, and I don't see much progress there, but it's hard to... It's a very difficult issue.
Right. Well, let's move to two of the things that I think are big burdens for us, and that is our debt and the entitlements. Those two, and I have a graph that you all prepared. It's kind of astonishing to look at, particularly to look at the debt ceiling since only 1981. And that steep climb. I don't think I could make it up that hill on this graph. It's a little startling. Now, how do you view this, and how do you put it into perspective for investors?
Well, the real answer is faster growth in the economy, more jobs, more tax revenue. And that's why it's so important to suddenly have this gift of new technology that gives us abundance of oil, which is the main reason we have a huge balance of payments deficit. This money going to, for the most part, the people who don't like us.
And, exactly.
And literally, now that money will stay home and employ American workers and lower the cost, which induces more plants in. And so I do think you'll see in the next 5 years a faster growth than expected. And with faster growth, we can get it up around 3-4%. The profits will throw off much higher revenue to the government.
Mm-hmm.
We went through this in the 80s when production, right in through the 90s, production healed the wounds. And the late 90s, we actually produced a budget surplus, if you recall.
Whoa.
Briefly.
That's a brief, wonderful thought.
Now, there will be some depreciation in the value of the dollar, so governments always manage to have the stated view of the Fed is we want to get inflation up to 2%, but it'll probably go quite a bit higher than that in the next decade, and that means you're paying back the debt with cheaper dollars.
Mm-hmm.
All these things go together, but it's
a big picture, isn't it?
It's a 25-year process.
Wow. Yeah.
But we're
optimistic and going. The only other thing, and we only have about a minute, the entitlements. Our entitlement spending is just going through the roof. Again, this climb, this mountain is just about as steep as our debt ceiling mountain that you'd climb to go up to see where we are now in terms of where we were just 1970. It's amazing. It's more than what? Quadrupled? Something like that or more. I can't even...
Well, it grows exponentially, and of course, that's just talking about the baby boomer retirement sending Medicare costs higher and Social Security costs higher. And there has to be a political answer, and surely I don't have it.
Yeah. You know what? Maybe our politicians should sit back and say, I don't know the answer. Maybe we all need to put our heads together.
Wouldn't that be refreshing?
Wouldn't that be terribly refreshing? Well, you've certainly given us a lot to think about. I like your positive approach to our country. I think our country is wonderful. I love it. I love that I live here. I'm so fortunate. But at any rate, Bob, thank you so much. And let's just tell our guests, our listeners, that you've been listening to Bob Long, chairman of Ariba Asset Management. We talked about our economic outlook in this country. And I'm Shirley Rooker. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM. Thank you for being with us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.